From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, this year's session makes history, but not for the reason you may think. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the potential for a pay raise for legislators. And our Pat Bradley will speak with 23rd Congressional District Representative Bill Owens on a number of issues, including the recent passage of the Federal Transportation Bill. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo has touted the recently concluded legislative session as one of the most successful in modern political history. As Karen DeWitt reports, the session...
According to analysis by the New York Public Interest Research Group, the 2012 session resulted in 571 pieces of legislation approved by both houses of the legislature. NYPERG's Bill Mahoney counted the number of bills introduced and passed in the Assembly and Senate for the past several decades, and he found that's the lowest number since 1914, 98 years ago.
Which is the fewest in nearly a century. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. There are a lot of bills which pass the legislature every year, which most people really don't think are very good. And so this doesn't tell the entire story of the session, but this is an interesting little factoid which puts a new spin on some of the talk we've heard about how this is a historic year for the state legislature.
Mahoney himself has mixed feelings about the numbers. His group lobbies for government reform, and he says he would have been happier if only 570 bills were agreed to this session. That's because he would have preferred not to have seen a redistricting bill that was passed in March. It drew what critics said were gerrymandered lines for Senate and Assembly districts. At the same time, he says lawmakers did not approve a number of environmental measures that his group was pressing, as well as campaign finance reform. It's hard to judge whether the number of bills approved corresponds with the quality of the legislation overall, but Mahoney says his analysis found some clues that may explain why the agreed-upon number of bills was smaller. Governor Cuomo issued fewer program bills than his predecessors, and a governor's views on a particular piece of legislation often drives the negotiations with the legislature.
Governor Cuomo introduced a lot fewer of those than previous governors have. He did have a higher success rate in terms of getting more of them passed, but there were less issues which he put out to the legislature for debate.
Cuomo has been a dominant force in leading the legislature to agreements in the first 2 years of his term, but he prefers to focus more closely on a smaller number of issues. The governor also refused at the end of the session to issue special messages of necessity to bypass the legal 3-day waiting period for bills after they are introduced and before they can be taken up on the floor. Mahoney says that also may have contributed to the smaller number of agreements in the final days of the session. And in recent years, there's been a trend toward fewer bills passed during the session, while at the same time, state budget bills have grown by hundreds of pages. They often include changes that used to be accomplished in a separate statute. One activity that has not diminished, though, says Mahoney, is the adoption of thousands of resolutions.
There were over 3,600 which passed the two chambers, dealing with all sorts of things, ranging from honoring somebody who became an Eagle Scout to congratulating the world's oldest barber.
Many resolutions are approved in around 10 seconds, but sometimes lawmakers spend more time if it's to honor an important person or occasion or to mark a death. And Mahoney says on many days, more resolutions were passed than bills. Lawmakers receive food and lodging expenses every day that they are in Albany. The legislator who got the most bills passed in both chambers during the two-year 2011-2012 session is Senator Kathy Young, a Republican from Olean. The lawmaker who introduced the most bills out of a total of over 12,000 bills proposed was former Brooklyn Senator Carl Krueger, a Democrat who resigned after pleading guilty to felony corruption charges. Lawmakers still have a chance to improve their record. They could return later in the year and agree on more bills. Most legislators expect to be back, likely after the fall elections, and there's been talk of a special session that might include a pay raise. That would up their record to at least 572 agreed-upon bills for the year. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok, of course, this week, shortened a bit by the July 4th holiday, Alan, and I want to wish all of our listeners a happy 4th, and to you as well.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I think a lot about American democracy and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and its Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, which, of course, allegedly was done on July 4th, but probably wasn't. And one, an instrument that was to get all people riled up enough to fight off the king. And the other, of course, was the document that protected this money, as we all know, happens in America, the landed and the wealthy. And, you know, as well as having to been forced to put the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, onto the Constitution. It's a mixed bag. This is a country which is always going to have its problems and its issues, and the tension between the haves and the have-nots, and it exists. It exists in New York State, certainly. I mean, you know, you take a look at the governor, Governor Cuomo. His father was a great liberal, a great advocate of people getting more. But the father, like the son, loved the fact that he had a Republican-Democratic Senate in order to say no so that he wouldn't have to do the self-disciplining that we see so much. Now we see a country that is going more towards the right. We see a young Governor Cuomo becoming a much more strict adherent to the people with them, of protecting the rights of the people who have the most. So the hell with the person who's carrying the bedpan or the teachers. They become, you know, people who could be victimized, or we can say become scapegoats, you know, for all of the pent-up energy that people have in tough times. So as you sit here and you watch fireworks, going through my mind is the inequities that exist in the society, which are really too bad. I mean, everybody deserves some health care. Everybody deserves to have some basic rights. And there are people who have so much that they just aren't interested in having people given, you know, a fair break.
Speaking of inequities, or at least the perception thereof, reading a story in the Daily Gazette of Schenectady that says legislators may vote on a pay raise later this year.
Well, yes, they're going to do that. There's no question in my mind that they want it. They want it all the time. At the same time, I was just talking to you about how unequal much of life is. We're cutting pensions for new workers. We're not giving pay raises to the people who carry the bedpans. And if we're giving them, they're minimal. And now the legislature has the chutzpah, unbelievable gall for the non-Yiddish speakers, unbelievable gall to say, we want a pay raise. Unbelievable. Now, there's a story in this morning's Times Union, a good story as we speak, that says that the quid pro quo will be giving up the per diems that each of these legislators get. You know, this is hysterical stuff. So now you get the guys who are running the prestigious restaurants, and they claim that 60% of their people are legislators and lobbyists. Oh, well, boo-hoo-hoo. You know, I mean, it's tough for business. Some of these are people I like very much, but come on, grow up. And I don't think that the legislators are going to want to give up those per diems. I don't think they're going to want to give up anything. And the people who have the power, once again, exercise it, in my view, in an unfair and silly manner.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York's current 14,000-square-mile 23rd Congressional District encompasses the northern tier of the state. This week, the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley spoke with the district's representative, Bill Owens, on a number of issues, including the recent passage of the federal transportation bill.
The federal transportation bill included an amendment co-sponsored by Democratic Congressman Bill Owens to maintain funding for off-system rural bridges.
What we were told in a conference call with the vast majority of the highway superintendents, county highway superintendents, was that in the absence of that being in the transportation bill, that they would essentially have no budgets for bridge repairs. So this is very significant because there's a lot of these smaller bridges that need repair, that need work, particularly after last year and the heavy rains. So this was very important to the local communities.
What else in the transportation bill related to transportation is going to help?
From the perspective of Plattsburgh, having mass transit funds in there, you know, people think of that as affecting New York City and Albany and Rochester, when in fact we have two major providers of equipment, being Bombardier and Nova Bus. So it means that there will be funding for their contracts. That means people will be working here in the district. So from my perspective, very important.
Now, one of the reasons why the transportation bill as a name is probably a bit of a misnomer is that there's other things in that bill. One of the ones that really came to light this year is the student loan interest rate. That will remain stable. How much pressure did you guys feel in the House over that issue?
Substantial. I mean, there's a number of issues associated with this. I was very concerned about it because if you start hiking that interest rate, you're going to reduce the number of students willing to take those loans, and that means willing to go to advance their education. And that's one of the critical elements in making sure that we have a long-term recovery in the economy. People have to have higher and higher levels of education. Doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be college-focused, but they need higher levels of education.
It almost seemed like the vote on that went to the 11th hour. Was that the case, or was it simply that the vote had to be taken with the transportation bill?
Unfortunately, it did go to the 11th hour, and it went there because people were not able to seriously negotiate, because they allow their ideology to get in the way of making good, solid decisions based upon the facts. And that's a real problem. It's a continuing problem in Congress. We did get it resolved, but in my view, did not have to come down to that. Should not have come down to that, but it's because we continue to grind in this unfortunate world where people are not making the decisions based upon good, sound facts. They're making them based upon ideology.
The transportation bill, with all of those issues, has been dealt with, but one that has yet to be completed is the farm bill. The Senate passed it. However, the House deliberations, I believe, aren't scheduled until next week.
July 11th. The bill, I believe, will largely mirror what the Senate has done in the House, with the exception of additional cuts to the food stamp program. There's going to be some significant additional cuts. We're going to see the hottest debates over the SNAP program. I think that the other issues will be negotiated out, but I think that that's going to create the most difficulty because there's some ideological differences on that issue.
Now, one of the new things in the farm bill that the Senate passed was the milk market stabilization plan.
That piece of the bill was really crafted by Colin Peterson, the ranking member on the House Ag Committee. So it has a margin insurance program associated with it and a supply management piece to it. What I was instrumental in doing was getting an opt-out in there so that farmers can decide not to participate. I think it's good because it gives people simply the right not to participate. The second is it will, in fact, allow farmers in this region where we have 11 processors potentially to make their own deals that may have longer-term impacts on them and their local communities and on the milk supply. Because, as you probably know, we're seeing a growth in the Greek yogurt processors.
Big time.
Big time. And that uses a tremendous amount of milk, which is good for dairy farmers locally. And we want to make sure they're getting the best price that they can. and that we keep those plants humming, if you will.
Do you anticipate any tweaks between the Senate version and the House version in that dairy stabilization plan?
I'm not hearing that we're going to have much debate on that program.
Moving on to another topic, you broke with the majority of the Democrats and you voted to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt of Congress. Why did you decide to vote for contempt?
I vote 35% of the time or so with the Republicans. And I believe that we need transparency. My view is that a judge should decide it, someone who's impartial.
Would you prefer to see Holder resign?
No, I don't think it's appropriate for Holder to resign until this issue is resolved by a court.
Another issue within the last couple weeks was the Supreme Court decision on health care. What were your thoughts when you first heard about the decision?
I would have to tell you that there was some surprise that Justice Roberts was the deciding vote and the author of the opinion. I've always said I think the law is a good first step. You know, I come to this with some background in the health field, having represented CVPH Medical Center for 27 years and more than 20 for Elizabethtown Community Hospital. I understand the issues that providers are going through. I understand issues that the system faces. We needed to take a step. In my view, this was a step in the right direction. I think the court upheld that. So I was quite pleased with that.
How much do you expect to really move forward when there's still Republicans, GOP, conservatives saying, nope, we're going to overturn this health care law?
That to me is fascinating. This repeal and replace mantra is really empty. There is no replace. Mr. Boehner was asked that recently on television, and he had no real answer. My friends on the other side of the aisle have not provided a plan or a roadmap of what they would do that will have any meaningful impact on healthcare, either in terms of giving us a system that improves healthcare outcomes or reduces costs.
Congressman Owens will hold a telephone town hall to answer constituent questions on Tuesday evening. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. An Ithaca, New York-based company called International Climbing Machines makes small robots that can climb wind turbines to check for damage. As the Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reports, workers on the ground might enjoy having these mechanical friends in high places.
International Climbing Machines, or ICM, has its headquarters in a shabby warehouse on the outskirts of Ithaca. The workshop is hardly bigger than a three-car garage. Metal shelves filled with spare parts line the walls. But in one corner, there's enough space for company president Sam Maggio to show off his device. It's called a climber.
You simply put a vacuum motor, standard industrial vacuum motor, on the body of the climber, and that establishes a vacuum in the chamber that's in the center of the climber.
That vacuum keeps the 25-pound robot stuck to the wall while it climbs, just like Spider-Man. But the robot doesn't look like Spider-Man. It looks like a sump pump with a 2-foot-long metal body and rubber tracks on either side. Workers operate it with a PlayStation controller. The climber has two classic characteristics of a successful invention. It's so simple that it makes you wonder why no one else had thought of it. And it solves a common problem, especially for people who have to work hundreds of feet off the ground.
The way they do now is with people rappelling, so they're dangling from ropes.
But that'll change with Maggio's robots.
So we'll be climbing on hydroelectric dams, cooling towers, large concrete surfaces to be able to detect cracks that are inside to find those flaws.
Here's how Maggio got the idea. Before moving to Ithaca, he was running a Boston company that removed and applied coatings on power plants and other large structures.
My first taste of that type work was needing to set up scaffolding, building tents, having large dust collection systems, and then putting human beings into that environment. And after several years of that, you know, I saw that it was extremely archaic and that there just needed to be a better way.
With a grant from the state's Economic Development Agency, Maggio started International Climbing Machines in Utica in 2001. He kept tinkering until he got it right. Now the climber can reach 500 feet and go around curved surfaces or over rough ones. That helped ICM cement a deal with GE Global Research to develop a robot with a camera that can check blades on wind turbines.
So you've probably noticed that, I know I have. I drive by a wind farm and there might be 25 wind turbines out there and 7 or 8 of them are shut down. And you wonder, why aren't they running?
Maggio says it's because people can't go up and check the blades when there's a lot of wind. So the turbines are shut down until someone can get up there safely. But there are no safety restrictions for Maggio's machine. And that's why the U.S. government is offering the device to Japan to help clean up the damaged Fukushima nuclear reactors. The robot could be used to apply a liquid rubber that would seal radiation inside the plants.
Let the climber do the actual work. Let the climber get near the toxic materials. Let the climber be faced with the dangers of the elevated heights, and have the human being stand on the ground with a PlayStation, you know, and operate it.
Maggio's robot is still in the testing and marketing phase, but he's hoping that'll change once companies see everything his machine can do.
People get set in their ways doing it a conventional approach, might be with scaffolding or ladders or cherry pickers or whatever these other methods that have been done for, if not decades, even hundreds of years. And we represent a shift in that thinking.
In Ithaca, I'm Matt Richman for InnovationTrail.org.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at InnovationTrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1227. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gastina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.